G.
G didn't message her sister to tell her she was coming. She didn't want to give her sister time to make up an excuse or be elsewhere, although she tried not to admit this to herself. She had been messaged the international airline tickets for a flight to Xichang in 3 days, where she would be given information in person, have a medical, and go through all of the contracts and conditions. Peace Begins with a Smile wouldn't be leaving for more than 2 months after that, but apparently she'd be back again later for a whole suite of inductions and orientation. She wanted to see her sister before her first trip, though, before everything changed officially. She would go and see her mother, too, but maybe afterwards, when everything was set and settled. She would have liked to go and see Anthony, but that was all water flowing swiftly under the bridge. When Anthony had left 9 months ago, it had felt like the end of the world. But if Anthony had stayed and things had progressed, she wouldn't have been eligible for Singles Day, and she wouldn't have used Smile to pay, and none of this would have happened. Perhaps it had been the end of the world when Anthony left. But now there was the beginning of a new one, a green and blue new world called Zoya. Davinia came to the door after her smart intercom had announced Jeannie's presence. "Hi," her sister said cheerily, kissing G on the cheek. "This is a surprise. Nice to see you." Davinia was always overbright and very polite whenever G saw her. Her sister was becoming quite successful as a financial officer, and her apartment, while small, was furnished and decorated immaculately. There were roses in a vase in the entryway, and for a minute, G thought they were real. They were so convincing. They'd even been subtly layered with scent. "Sit down and have a drink. It's been so long," Davinia gushed, tugging G forward into her tasteful kitchenette. Her sister wasn't quite as convincing as her roses. There was a moment that was between them. There would always be between them. "I'm sorry," Jeannie had tried to say to her sister afterwards so many years ago now. "You know I don't mean it. You know I can't help it." Her words had been as light as spun candy, floating on the air between them. They had blown away. When Jeannie was a teenager, her sister had come home one evening when she should have still been at a concert. For a second, Jeannie had looked blankly at the shivering huddle of her sister, her shirt ripped, one eye swollen almost shut, the other hunted and desolate. As Davinia incoherently told their parents what had happened, Jeannie had felt something rising up within her, wet and dark. She clenched a fist in front of her mouth and ran from the room. Her sister and the rest of the family could not help but hear, though, as peal after peal of laughter rang out through the hall. Xanthi. It was a long way down. High among the buildings, out on the ledge, Xanthi looked down. Dizzyingly, far below, she could see the street, and the very small dots that were the people. It's not accurate, though, she thought. There are only a few people. It should be packed with moving dots, people everywhere, teeming and swarming, filling up all the spaces, full of people and empty of anything else. It's peaceful up here. There's no one up here but me. Jump, came a voice, her brother's voice. Xanthi took another step, till she was right at the very end of the plank. It's all about your conscious mind taking back control, came her brother's calm voice again, overriding the base part of your brain, the animal instincts. You can do it. Down there was where the people were, even if she couldn't see them. And the messages of your body have their own truth. Jump, said her brother. But there were other truths, too. Xanthi jumped. Xanthi had always hated crowds of people, even as a young child. But after the accident, after her family had just never arrived, she'd been progressively worse. It wasn't even really accurate to call it an accident, a disaster, a catastrophe, murder. The maglev field of the Sufeti they'd been traveling in had been sabotaged. Xanthi didn't understand the physics of how this was even possible. The train had been jam-packed, as they always were, full of the afternoon's commuters. Among them, her family, coming up to see her graduation. Inoclophobia is what her brother called it. He knew everything. She just knew the excessive sweating, the palpitations, the tightness in her chest, and the breath that wouldn't come. There were just so many people every time she took a step outside. People everywhere swarming like insects, crushing against her, crushing her, taking all the space, all of the air, taking it all, and no retreat. No retreat in all the world. She'd stopped going outside. She'd stopped going anywhere. Even in VR environs where too many avatars gathered, it was just as bad. She played solitary games. No retreat in all the world. Not in this world, perhaps, but maybe another. "Tell me more about Zoria," she said to her brother. "Karen." "Zoria," her sister breathed. All of the animation that had been missing from Vic's face had flooded back, although many emotions chased each other across her face, and she seemed to be having trouble settling on just one. Karen remembered Vic talking nonstop about Zoria when they were young, with excitement, shining eyes, and just a little obsession. Vic was the one who had told her about the rift. There it was. There it had always been, within their own solar system, just outside the orbit of Jupiter, just sitting there, waiting to be discovered, as if someone had put it there, just for them. The rift was a fold in space, a wrinkle, a worm. And on the other side, just a few months further travel, was Zoria. "I wish I was you," Vic said. Her face was elated and envious and saddened all by turns. "I wish I was you." "That would make the first time," Karen said, although her voice was gentle as she watched her sister's face alive with feeling. "Oh, Vic," she thought. "How long has it been?" "What?" said her clone, her transporter accident, her reflection, her other self, her beta version, her sister. "Do you know," Karen said, "that I always have my eyes closed in photos?" "DNA, I have no idea what you are talking about now," said Vic. But something was different. Something was easing, loosening between them. "You told me once," Karen said, "that our eyes could tell us apart. I always liked the fact that if I closed my eyes, the computers and the algorithms and the facial recognition systems and AI couldn't tell exactly who I was. I liked being ambiguous. I never minded being confused with you." Vic grimaced, but her eyes were shining still. "I never even minded," Karen said, confessing, "when we were really small, and Ma used to dress us up alike." "Ugh," said Vic. "You're killing me. You know that." "I know you always hated it. You hated being a twin." "I didn't." "You did, Vic." "Maybe I didn't need a twin," her sister said. "But I always needed a sister." Then tears made it look like her eyes were swimming with lights. "Oh, Ren. When you go to Zoria, I'll never see you again." "I'll never see you again," Karen thought. "Never on this world or any other." And she hugged her sister and smiled and cried at the same time. Yuyan. Westlake was overcrowded, but still beautiful. The autumn trees glowed like they were lit from within. "So much history," thought Yuyan. How many lovers and families and lonely young singles had converged here over all of these hundreds of years? How many were like her, restless, hoping, wondering? How many had secrets curled up within them? In 2 days' time, she could be on a bullet train to Xicheng. Uncounted child. stowaway child. Robert. He'd said he would raise the child with her if that was what she wanted. Of course he would, he'd said. Of course. Irresponsible child. Burdensome child. But something felt broken. Something was moving. Something was changing. And as she looked at all the people crossing the sunken bridge, some of them lingering, walking slowly, some holding hands, looking out to the water, Yuyan thought she knew what that thing was. She wasn't waiting anymore. G's afternoon at her sister's place was perfectly pleasant. G reminded herself to tug the corners of her mouth upwards at the appropriate times. Davinia didn't seem to notice anything awry, so it may have worked. Mum said you were dating a guy? Davinia asked at one point. Anthony. He'd been a heady combination of smart and charming, with just the slightest dash of needy, and G had fallen for him like she was a rock plummeting in flame towards the earth. He tried to understand. She tried to explain. It's not that I don't care. It's not that I'm not happy. My wiring is screwed up somehow, she told him. I know I only smile when it is inappropriate. I'm not really smiling, not on the inside. She wondered if that was exactly true, even as she said it. The physical act of smiling or laughing brought her a certain exuberance. At some very basic level, it felt good. Anthony, no, that didn't work out, she told her sister. Davinia looked vaguely sympathetic, but not surprised. The last time G had seen Anthony, he'd been leaving her flat with all his things. Jeannie had watched him through the window, her nails pressing little crescent marks into her hands. He's gone, she'd thought. He's not coming back. She felt herself fizzing, like she was uncorked champagne about to spill. She'd thrown her head back. Let me cry for him, she'd begged mutely. Let me cry for me. Just once. Let me cry. Her shoulders had started shaking. She opened her mouth. And she'd laughed. High and loud and long. It's been lovely that you dropped in, Davinia said, in what felt like a dismissal. Don't take so long next time. So long. But it would be so long. And so long. You will never forgive me, will you? G said, as she turned to her sister at the door. She grinned fiercely, stifling a rising giggle. Davinia looked startled. I don't know what you mean, she said. Then something around her eyes softened, and she reached out to touch Jeannie's arm, just lightly. Honestly, G, there is nothing to forgive. G didn't believe her, but she let Davinia hug her, although only briefly. Goodbye, she said. On the bullet train, on the way home, she snagged a seat and sat with her head resting up against the glass of the window, peering past her own reflection to the lights in the darkness streaking by. She was imagining alien life on Zoria, deep, silent life that moved far beneath her waters, or, who knew, perhaps hidden surprising life on land that they'd never encountered before to take them unawares. If life like that felt such a thing as joy or sadness or loss, if they felt such things at all, surely they would show them in an alien way. They would have no tears to cry. How would we even be able to tell, thought Jeannie, how they felt? What was happening within them? And they wouldn't be broken, and they wouldn't be wrong. They would just be different. And maybe her sister would never forgive her. Not right down at the heart of it. But maybe eventually, she would be able to forgive herself. Xanthi. Let's try again, said her brother, as calm and unruffled as ever. What I don't understand, said Xanthi, wiping away the sweat that was beading on her forehead and running down her nose, playing for time, trying to distract him, is that all of the pod docs talk about how the exactly 1,000 people aboard the great ship are all carefully selected and vetted and chosen so that they will all blend into a perfectly tight-knit group. The AI runs psychoanalytic profiles of them all, right? And it does, what did you say? Gaussian blending on the probabilities or something? She probably had that wrong. And, said her brother, unperturbed, and it does all of that, and then what? It just randomly throws a bunch of seats on the most sought-after ship in history and raffles them off to what? Single people who smile nicely while buying pots and pans and VR games and other inane shopping items? Her breath was still coming in tight little gasps, and she sat down and put her head down to her knees. I have two theories on that, said her brother. Of course you do, she mumbled into her knees. Firstly, he said, it's not random. It was always you, no matter what you bought or when or which way you smiled to pay for it. Not random. But they were looking for people to form a cohesive group. And one thing she didn't do was work well in groups. Just the word group was now making her chin tremble. Or, said her brother, you were completely random. Xanthi felt completely random. And the system, no matter how perfect, needs randomness. Xanthi risked raising her head. Her brother's form was still perched on the sofa, his slender hand folded under his chin. Huh? She said. Remember when you asked me about the AI and deep machine learning? I guess. I explained to you then about how the system needs some random weightings in there in case it gets stuck in a local minimum. You need to shake the system up a bit. Genetics is the same. Life throws all sorts of random mutations out there to see what will work, what will stick. So I'm the random mutation in this equation? It's like the sand in the pearl, the grit. I think the AI knows what it's doing. Xanthi wasn't entirely sure that made her feel better. Now stop procrastinating, her brother said firmly. I believe we're up to a group of 10. The familiar panic spiked again in Xanthi's chest. I don't think I can do this, she said faintly. That's the same thing you said before, said her brother, made of stone. You want to go to Zoria? Yes, said Xanthi. Although she wasn't sure it had been a question. She pined for space the same way she did the ocean. A sea of stars, a planet full of wide open spaces, air and sky. To get there, you have to go outside your apartment, her brother continued inexorably. In 2 days' time, you have to sit on a plane for hours, and you also have to travel for years in a spaceship with 1,000 people in it. Okay. 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 She could feel her body seizing with adrenaline and concentrated on breathing deeply. She was the grit. She would be the grit. She'd better show some. She clicked to expand the sidebars of her glasses, and her living room became the interior of a plane's cabin with 10 people in it. Karen. You know what is really amazing? Said Vic, wiping her eyes and smiling. My DNA will be in 2 far-reaching parts of the galaxy, light years apart. It's almost like getting to go to Zoria myself. You'll be doing it for both of us. We're a pair of entangled particles, you and I. It doesn't matter how far the gap between us. Karen thought of entangled particles. Her sister had told her about that before, her sister who loved space and physics and astronomy. her matching twin particle, at the other side of the galaxy. And she thought of love, love instantaneous and entangled. Your DNA will get to be in two vastly separate places in the universe either way. Even shiny with tears, her sister's eyes looked just like her own. Although they weren't. Not really. What do you mean? Vic said. Yuyan. Yuyan watched the lights dancing over Westlake. Zoria was meant to be shining and beautiful, but not beautiful like this, wrapped in legends, singing in her heart, known and loved. Zoria had no memory, no history, no stories, or not any that she knew or could know. Is this what it was now, truly? A choice between the future and the past? If she was changing now, transforming, like Lady Whitesnake, who was she changing for? And what was she turning into? And the child, her child, who knew no stories yet either. Unwritten child. Untold child. Last night she had squeezed into their small kitchen area and cut tofu and mushroom, while her mother added doubanjiang to hot oil. Her father was much frailer now, and his white head nodded on his chest as he watched the news pod. Yuyan could see the flashing images of tensions rising with the no-go-zo countries, the glimmering solar megafarm partially wiped out by a Category 3 storm in the northern provinces, the great ship, Peace Begins with a Smile, in lower Earth orbit, all prepped and waiting for her crew. Of course she needed to stay. Past and future, here, both together, the stories running and entwining like a river. They are still looking for people to travel on that great ship, she'd said idly to her mother, while the smell of chili and fermented broad beans filled the air. But how could those people just go and leave everything, their families and all of their history behind? Yuyan's mother paused, spatula in hand. Your father's cough is getting bad, she said. Then she resumed stirring, slowly. Your great-grandmother came here from Qingchengshan, she said. History is not still. It moves. We take our stories with us. We take all of our past. This new planet, it is like a gift. I pray every day that you will get to go there someday. She kept stirring and didn't look at Yuyan. Every day, I pray. Xanthi. Xanthi put her pack by the door. Are you ready? Said her brother from the sofa. No, she said, completely truthfully, her palms sweating, her breathing rapid and shallow. You were out there yesterday, he said. You were fine. Remember, your conscious brain is in control. Grit. She was the grit. Did I tell you that Peace Begins with a Smile is made of self-healing materials, long-chain molecules called ionomers? Her brother asked. Despite her thudding heart and blurring vision, Xanthi found her way to a very small, wobbly smile. No, she said. I don't think you did. She heals herself, your great ship, her brother told her. She heals herself. Okay, said Xanthi. I'm ready. She wasn't, but that was okay too. She paused, though, with her hand at the door. I wish you could come with me, she said. This also was true. I wish I could too, kitten. She took off her AVR glasses and pocketed them, but she didn't turn back around. Goodbye, she said to her empty apartment. Yuyan. The doctor was brusque, but her eyes were kind. The little room gleamed with antiseptic white and formality. Now, have you been experiencing any sickness? She asked Yuyan in the preliminary interview before she had even started the tests. Sickness? Yuyan asked. She scrunched further down in the surprisingly plush chair she'd been directed into. From the pregnancy. From the pregnancy. Secret child. Hidden child. Forbidden child. Impossible child. Could it be that her child was not entirely secret after all? And not perhaps entirely forbidden? Maybe not impossible. Maybe not impossible. How? She began, her hand going, without her conscious control, back to her stomach. It's the safest place for that baby to be for acceleration, tucked up in there, warm and snug, the doctor was saying. Of course they'll be born in space before you arrive. Yours won't be the only one, I can guarantee that. There were quite a few young ones on board the first two great ships by the time they made it planetside. Yuyan was remembering the pop verts that had been on her phone, clasped to her wrist. There had been verts for pregnancy tests and bassinets and formula, even before she had known herself. In fact, that was why she had ordered some tests online using Smile to Pay, because she'd been feeling odd and she'd seen the verts. And it had made her wonder, hadn't she? But how had her phone known before she did? Had her secret been told as she pressed her thumb to unlock it? By her temperature? Her heart rate? Yuyan held out her slim inner arm so the doctor could poke her with a needle. Possible child. Spacefaring child. Explorer child. Future child. There were 50 Smile to Pay winners from all around the planet Earth, excluding, of course, no-go-zo countries, all converging in Xichang, arriving within a three-day period. The team of 7 photographers were on hand to feed live images to the pod docs, and the first 4 people to emerge from processing made an ideal first photo opportunity. Feng Le led the team, and he was keen to get this first image out there in real time.
Just move on in, a little closer, directed Feng Le.
The 4 of them inched in together. The air was clear. The sun was striking the mountains in the background. It would make a good shot. I like your haircut, one of them said to the woman next to her. Thanks, said the short-haired one, her face brightening into an easy, quick smile, running her hand against the fuzziness at the back of her neck. It's new.
Okay, ready?
Feng Le said. 2 of them were ready. And 2 of them weren't, not really. 2 were thinking the exact same thing in this moment, but would never realize it. 2 of them would start a relationship with each other while on board the ship that would sustain and last them the rest of their lives.
1, 2, 3. Smile.
One of them looked like she was going to burst into tears. One of them looked like she was wearing the ocean. One of them radiated happiness, her face lit up like a star. And one of them closed her eyes.